SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back, hour two, opening day here in the 2019 broadcast year. And we didn't get a chance to send 2018 off with Sid Fernando and wish him and family a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. But we were in contact between then and now. So I'll just reiterate, Sid, I hope it was a wonderful Christmas and a happy, healthy New Year.
Thank you, Steve. I appreciate that. We had a really good time. Thanks, and Happy New Year to you as well.
I appreciate it, and just realizing, there were so many of us in Brooklyn. I was there visiting Spencer, and we had our second Christmas, the first one up here with Zachary and his fiance, and then Tina and I went down, and then Casey was in Brooklyn as well.
Oh my God!
And,
really?
Yeah, I'm thinking about it, and I didn't get a chance to see Casey. I mean, he had a big family, vacation, Christmas holiday. In New York, he was there almost the whole time we were off. But we all could have assembled for Natal and you and everybody, me and Casey. We had a nice time actually, and sometimes we'll stay on the island, sometimes we'll stay in the city. But I actually stayed right downtown, right off Flatbush Extension, right across from the Barclay Center, and they've never done that.
Fairly close to me, really. I mean, I'm in Park Slope.
And we were doing all kinds of neighborhood stuff. We tromped around Williamsburg, then we went.
I was in Williamsburg a few days after Christmas, meeting POTUS Capper for the first time.
He'd
requested it.
Yeah, well, an audience. They wanted an audience with you, Sid. I want to mention our friend Neil Kleinberg. His son Alex has opened a place on Tompkins called Kleinberg's, and we went there. That was terrific, and also Spencer took us to a. It took us to like a southern breakfast joint, and I got to get you and very simple, a diner-esque, Sid. And if you've not been, I got to find the name because it was out of this world. And
yeah,
apparently, usually there's a wait, and we slipped in with just a couple of minutes, and then by the time we were done, they were lined up out the door. I want to say Jimmy's. Does that make sense? Here we go. Yeah, Jimmy's Diner. Jimmy's Diner.
Where is that?
I'm going to tell you right away. It was right near that nice. It was right. It's on Union Avenue, and it right toward the river, and it was. What's the park? There's a beautiful park right there. McCarran Park.
Mm-hmm.
And they had a beautiful farmer's market going, and really nice.
Have to check it out.
Yeah, I'll give you some more data. And I hadn't been where we were. I've been friendly with the Rosen family for many years that owns Juniors, and hadn't been to Juniors on Flatbush Extension, and also went in. There's the Macy's right there, which used to be A&S,
mm-hmm.
And in 1982, Sid, I interviewed with Abraham and Strauss, and almost went to work for them, as it happens. Yeah. And so I was it was fun. We really had a nice few days in Brooklyn. Yeah, but a lot to do, and the weather was pretty. The weather was moderate, so Christmas in the new year. Nice. Sid, a couple of things to consider, and I see that you just had an interesting exchange that involved Tanya Gunther, and there's so much about these eclipse categories that that are getting, you know, kind of added consideration as the year wound down. And I'll tell you that, I mean, I voted for John Gunther, and I thought that, you know, it was too exceptional a year for, you know, voters not to, you know, not to take note of an operation like Glenwood.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, they had for Breeder, of course, exceptional year. Just as a, you've probably seen this and know about it anyway, but Ray Pollock had brought it up that usually for Breeder, you know, quote unquote old days, because it was kind of a specialty item, the way it used to be voted on was that each of the three bodies would have a small committee instead of everybody voting on it. And I was actually in it for the Daily Racing Form. There were two people in the Daily Racing Form, two from the Turf Riders, two from the NTRA. And we would kind of go through the stats just to make sure that, you know, Breeders got credit where it might not have been otherwise obvious. And back then, when I think about it, for example, Will Farish was in a lot of different partnerships back then, too. W.S. Kilroy, W.S. Farish, and Kilroy. You know, so we'd actually have to go back. We'd go back and take, remove him to make sure that, you know, he got the proper credit he did, just as an example. But also you want to look at a smaller operation that might get lost that had exceptional achievement. And what you're pointing out in this case is Glenwood has, you know, relatively a small broodmare band and punched well above its weight this year.
And that element to me is key. That,
yeah,
acknowledge, you know, go out of your way when the opportunity arises to acknowledge the you know, the stakeholders that have had, that are having or had in a in, you know, in the calendar year, disproportionate success. And this is a textbook case. I mean, beyond, and it goes beyond the Triple Crown winner. I mean, all the way through to last Saturday with Competition of Ideas. I mean, another Grade One winner, and Vino Rosso, and then there were, you know, assorted other, you know, nice horses, and some other, including some that Gunther himself actually is campaigning, and not to even, I mean, technically, I guess you can't include, you know, the European campaigners, but I mean, to me, it you know, it was,
well, there
it was
aren't
a pretty
any rules, really. So when you see a big body of work like that, you want to also, if you're, you know, really looking into it, you know, the historical value, just the Triple Crown winner, but when you do throw in a horse like Without Parole as well, the European horse, you know, it adds to the texture. You know, I pointed out to somebody back when this first started in the early 70s, Paul Mellon got credit also because of the European race Mill Reef. Now, Mill Reef was bred here, but campaigned in Europe, homebred, of course, Epsom Derby winner. So, you know, it's the long and the short is that, you know, many people struggle with owner and breeder. You've noticed that there were several ballots that people have released on Twitter that have abstained or didn't put anything down for owner and breeder. Because it is kind of a specialty, Ray, you know, brought up the idea that perhaps it should be a more committee type of vote. And he's got some points. I mean, that's how it was, like I said, when I was there. And we always tried to make sure that what you're pointing out, a smaller operation didn't get, hidden under massive statistical data that might ignore it.
Well, go back to that, Sid. I mean, historically, and is there a parallel? Was there a parallel at the time that, and of course, we didn't have necessarily the same, gigantic, big box store type breeding outfits, gigantic commercial mm-hmm. factories at the time, but any examples that come to mind, of the kind of breeder of the year recognition for operations that might have been boutique types and those that are closest to the ground on this mm-hmm. acknowledge them.
Yeah, I mean, if you go back, in the case of in the case of this particular horse, I think if you go back to the last five Triple Crown winners, ordinarily you would that the breeder of a Triple Crown winner is so exceptional that usually that horse would be getting a credit for that. The breeder would be. I mean, if you go back to the Zayats, obviously aren't huge breeders, but they got credit for American Pharoah. The only one I can think of who didn't get credit, either as an owner or a breeder, and there was a little backlash at that time.
Seattle Slough.
And that may not necessarily be the case for the breeder part, which was Ben Castleman, who bred Seattle Slough.
Yep.
He didn't get breeder of the year, but that was the year 77, if memory serves correct, that it was Winfield, E.P. Taylor, big year in Europe, it was breeder of the year. But tellingly, Steve, neither did the partnership that owned Seattle Slough, the Hills and the Taylors. They were not voted owner of the year that year. And I think a part of that was the backlash of voters because Seattle Slough, like Justify, didn't have a second-half campaign. Seattle Slough was defeated in the Swap Stakes by J.O. Tobin, never raced again, never faced older horses. I think people were, at the time, kind of irked by their treatment of Billy Turner.
Mm-hmm.
Who had developed Seattle Slough
yep.
and did not want to run the horse in the swaps, but they forced his hand to go out there and run him. The horse lost. Of course, subsequently, the horse was taken away from Turner. There aren't any hard and fast rules, but if you look at the way, the other guys, Harbor View Farm, the next year, of course, got credit both as owner and breeder with the firm. It was it was telling that the Slough crew didn't. And when you use that example, and kind of look at it versus this year, you'll see people are struggling amplify and accelerate. And if they give the vote to justify, they'll then give the owner to accelerate owners. Or if they're giving the horse of the year to, justify, it seems like they're going to then give the, they're making it, it's just natural human nature that they're trying to give somebody credit here, they take it away there. And I think that's, that's just human nature. And horses sometimes will get, and their connections will get punished in one way or another, just by the view of a voter subliminally thinking, well, I should not give him credit because they didn't do that.
Well, it's funny you couch it in those terms, because personally, I made Costa Aronis my selection as owner.
And yeah, and a lot of people did if they voted for Justify as
horse, which I did as well. And
there you
and,
go.
So
I think Marcus Hirsch did the same thing. I saw his online. Excuse
Marcus
my
and
voice,
I,
by the way, recovering from a little bronchitis.
Everybody's sick. Johnny D was a scratch today. He's sick. Seth Merrow, actually, who never begs off TV, Seth had to go home early, I think, on Saturday. He's been sick a week. Casey got sick in New York. So it's not a surprise. I think, well, we had some 18 degrees, then 50 degrees. Pneumonia, as we call it. So,
that's right. Exactly.
There's also the discussion that, and Marcus and I had, Marcus and I had an exchange about, we talked about this topic, among others, and also about the older female division, and I did something, I kind of different. I that's kind of a separate discussion, but there to me there were some categories that got very tough, and turf male, of course, everybody was grappling with, and I found older female impossible. It just was just the murkiest of murky years, with some very abbreviated campaigns, or a couple of really good performances, and then fell off a cliff like Abel Tasman, Unique Bella. I mean, she beat, you can count on two hands the amount of horses she beat. I couldn't vote for either of them. I went and voted for Blue Prize, who I thought had a campaign that was worthy and kind of under the radar. She had a very complete campaign. But one of the things that you're exchanging this discussion with, you're having with Tanya Gunther, and I saw where Ed DeRosa, another that revealed the ballot. Ed made a statement, basically, that he's not voting for owner unless there's there's going to be a policy of revealing ownership percentage. That somehow, I mean, to me, I don't understand why that is a necessary component of making a decision, frankly, the ownership percentage, and this all started basically, this all revolves around Sal Cumin, obviously. Even if the ownership percentages were to be made public, it still doesn't tell you necessarily if you knew what percentage Head of Plains or Matic had. It doesn't. Those are agglomerations of partners themselves. So
yeah.
I get the sense that this is all a machination process to somehow anoint Sol as owner of the year. create a new category, Syndicate Manager of the Year. Then I don't get this. I thought Jay Hovde had it right last year when he said, you know, if this is something that, you know, that Sal Kuhnman would like, well then campaign, you know, all your involvement under one name, under one entity.
Yeah, I mean, you know, these are business things, and I don't think that, you know, people's business things necessarily have to be, you know, I think the idea that, you know, syndicates are increasing, and, you know, it's there's nothing wrong with trying to create a category, you know, syndicate. Like you said, Syndicate Manager of the Year, a Racing Syndicate of the Year or whatever, you know, that's not a bad idea at all. In terms of releasing, I kind of agree with you on several levels. One is, you know, I don't think people need to know what people's personal percentage ownerships or of a horse are. I mean, you know. At the same time, Jay Hovde's right. You know, people. You know, if you're campaigning under various names, it's not up to voters to try to tabulate. Well, Sal Kuhnman is Madicat. He's had a Plains. He's you know. It's way too difficult to do that, and in Saul's case, he wants to do it because he's involved in different partnerships in those things, different people. So, you know, it's his personal business to do that. At the same time, an entity that raised as head of Plains shouldn't get the same credit for Madicat Stables as well. I understand that ideology as well. I think if it's a guy's name, like I mentioned before, Will Farish and W.S. Kilroy, or Will Farish and somebody else, or Will Farish can get credit because he's listed as Will Farish. So I think there is something into the actual ownership by name. And that's what Jay Hovde addressed, and I think that's what you were talking about. When it comes to, for example, Windstar, that's similar to the Will Farish type of name. Windstar is always Windstar, so it's not like it's all human as six different stables names. Windstar is always raised as Windstar. So I think if I were doing it, I would give Windstar more credit in that because Windstar is actually racing as its own entity, even in various partnerships. And I happen to know, and I wrote a column about this early on. It was actually the first time it was revealed earlier this year that in the Windstar partnerships, Kenny Trout wants to have controlling interest. So they control 60% of the partnership. So in those Windstar partnerships, for example, of Windstar, SF Bloodstock, and China Horse Club, it was Windstar 60%, China Horse Club 25%, and SF 15%. So Windstar is the larger equity holder, which is what Tanya Gunther asked me on Twitter today. Her question actually was, would it be possible, welcome requirement to disclose majority or controlling equity interest? Windstar had a big year, and it's unfortunate if they don't get full credit due to transparency issues. Specified equity, because my initial thought is that leases shouldn't be viewed on par with equity. That was her question to me on Twitter. I was just coming on with you, so I told her I would address that to her after I got off the show. But I think it is unfortunate in that particular sense that Windstar is not even being mentioned because of the entire partnership kind of issue that's up right now. In the Salt and Cumin case, and I will say this, Salt and Cumin did have an incredible year in the sense that every time I watched the race feed and I watched the owner lead the horse into the winner's circle, it was it seemed like it was always Saul Cumin leading the horse in. Now, I don't know if Saul has some agreement in all these partnerships, whether it's with La Penta or any of these other ones, that he gets to be the guy that leads them in. But, boy, I've never seen a guy lead more Grade 1 winners into the winner's circle than I saw this year with Saul Cumin.
No, I'm certainly happy for the success and the involvement. To me, this discussion is—I won't say moot, but it's rendered somewhat neutralized when there's the presence of Seth Klarman's, Costa Aronis, Peter Brandt, and any other number of people who are easily identifiable and 100% worthy of this kind of recognition. I don't understand this backflipping and carrying on and teeth gnashing when you've got somebody like Costa Aronis and Seth Klarman, and especially with Brandt coming back the way he has into the game. There's three people that you could have as any would be a worthy first choice. Instead of having to worry.
Legitimate people, yeah. No question about it.
So, I don't know.
And, the interesting thing is, last year, there was more talk about Saul Cumin getting, getting in than there is even this year, the possibility. And this year, Saul Cumin had even a bigger year, but I think after last year, when his representative, Liz Crowe, wrote a letter to all the voters, there was a tremendous backlash against that.
Right.
And that's had a big effect on them this year. Because people, the backlash against that, even though Cumin had a bigger year this year than last year, people are much more reticent about including Cumin this year after that backlash of the Liz Crowe letter.
That's probably true, and there's also something about not that Saul doesn't buy horses whole and campaign them whole. I mean, Lady Eli most notably, but there's just not going to be the same acknowledgement of ownership. To be feted when you're buying into horses after their talent has been identified.
That's a point, and an extension of that point. Unfortunately, I think an extension of that point was that Saul Cumin. And nothing against these guys because they did a terrific job. But Bradley Wiseboard is his, representative.
Bloodstock, yeah.
And
yeah.
Unfortunately, Bradley has gotten a lot of flack because he's exuberant and he puts down, for example, in Twitter every time that when he buys a percentage of a horse for Saul that he bought. Was a Bradley Wiseboard private purchase, which makes it sound like he bought the whole horse. When in fact, it would have been better off if he said Bradley Wiseboard private purchase percentage for Saul Cumin. You know what I mean? So I know from people in the industry that they, are upset with that kind of stuff. So and rightfully. And so when Bradley Weisbord says, you know, we can't pay 28 G1 winners or something this year, that has a negative effect. And Saul is the beneficiary of that negative effect, unfortunately. Because I think Saul, you know, you want guys like him in the game.
Absolutely.
He's there, you know, as a young guy, or guy in his 40s, I guess, or just interested in, you know, trying to win these races. And as Saul pointed out to me, you know, except for Midnight Bazoo. Except for Midnight Bazoo, it was already a G1 winner when he bought into the horse. Everything else, although proven horses, like you said, weren't the G1 winner. So in other words, they didn't buy the G1 winner and win more G1. They bought a horse they identified, and it did go up in class. Several of these, of course, from Europe as well. I don't want to take anything away from them, but at the same time, I completely understand the feelings of people. Point you just made about proven horses, and you know, everybody has done that. Even Peter Brandt, several of these were ex-Europeans that were proven horses, but several were young horses too. Even though the Dark Angel colt, the Raging Bull, was purchased in Europe, he was unraced. As was, you know, so I think Peter Brandt, anybody putting Peter Brandt in, that's a legitimate, he's legitimate to be put in. I mean, had a heck of a year with Chad Brown. And any of these others that you mentioned as well, Steve, it's an interesting discussion, though, and it just shows you a lot about you know, voters are human, and they're going to have emotions as well, and they can punish you.
Yeah, I was going to say it shows all. You know, you get a 360 degree view of.
I find it really fascinating just to see the reasoning. A lot of it, you know, just normal human feeling.
Couple of things. We'll know more next week when we've got finalists. At some point early in the year, Sid will have a recap of the first crop stallions and the general sire list and those kinds of things. I would love for you, because I haven't mentioned it yet. Dan Kenny passed during the holiday season, four or five days ago, and of course had a really varied career, including, of course, part of his legacy will be Four Star Sales. You know, one of the outstanding consigners. Kerry Coffin and team. In fact,
Francis Caron.
Francis is involved, right, with Four Star?
Yeah, and it's an interesting thing because the original Four Star, the Four Stars of Four Star, three of them now have passed, unfortunately. David Fatty Greathouse, Johnny T.L. Jones Jr., and now Dan Kenny. And the young guy of that group had been Kerry Coffin, who's Steve Coffin's brother, of course. Kerry, Francis, they all worked at Walmac under Johnny Jones, who was their mentor. And interesting story, Francis, of course, is very close with Johnny T.L. Jones, and in fact is very good friends with Johnny's daughter, Julie. And when Johnny died, Francis and Kerry together journeyed to Texas, Quanah, Texas, for his funeral. It was over Thanksgiving. And then on the way back, they decided to go out of their way to visit Dan Kenny. I think he was in Atlanta in hospice at that time.
Yeah.
So they drove all the way out to visit Dan Kenny, and there was a point when they got to the hospital where whether they were going to be allowed to see Dan or not, because he was in a pretty bad shape. But finally, Dan's son allowed them to go see Dan, And Francis said it was, you know, it was amazing that Dan was so happy to see them. Really picked, you know, picked up his spirits. And then after they saw Dan, Kerry, you know, they came back to Kentucky. And then it was Francis that actually that told me before anyone knew that Dan had passed away on Christmas. Independently, I knew Dan from way back. I put some tweets out. Dan was just a tremendously nice guy. Of course, I've done a lot of business with Four Star through the years for my clients. I've worked with Arabic consultants. You know, Four Star is one of the consigners we use. Primarily because I knew Johnny T.L. Jones and David Fatty Greathouse and Dan Kenny. And Dan and I spent a lot of time, every time I came, we used to go out to Lexington in the bar at Dudley's where, you know, he was a raconteur. He was an incredible writer. He was a broadcaster. You know, really handsome guy, just a super nice guy who was charismatic. Just, you know, really attracted to people. One of my last memories of Dan at Four Star, he a few years back, he was afflicted by this condition and still had showed so much dignity. And I'd come by the Four Star consignment with my friend Rocco Baldelli, ex-MLB player, who's now the manager of the Twins, youngest manager of the Twins. Rocco's in the horse business, too. And Dan, I saw Dan's face light up when he saw Rocco. And Dan just came up to me and said, would you introduce me to Rocco? And I said, of course. And so I introduced the two of these guys. Now, I got to tell you something here. I just told you what a nice guy Dan is. And Rocco Baldelli is probably one of the nicest guys that ever lived. So I just had to, I just got watch these two really nice guys talk after I introduced them, and it was great. I mean, they acted like they were old friends and talking baseball, and you know, it was just such a great memory. I told Francis, in fact, you know, I was obviously really saddened to hear about Johnny Jones dying because Johnny was a character. Johnny was a lot older than me, but he was, you know, he had more age on him than Dan did, and he was a character, and he'd been sick for a while. But I felt particularly sad when I heard about Dan because. Just the circumstances of Dan's death and, you know, and the disease he had, Lewy body disease, and what a nice gentleman, just a super nice guy he was, and just my own personal memories of just being in that bar at Dudley's with him and his stories and his interest in life and interest in you, interest in people, and, you know, just did everything so up and up. Years ago, I even did a deal with Dan. He had a client. I had a client. It was a $900,000 sale. And Dan and I were the two agents, and it couldn't have gone smoother. And I was, you know, just another element to Dan's way of handling things. And, yeah, it was kind of sad for me to hear that story particularly, and you know, rest in peace, Dan. I know they're going to have a celebration for Dan at Dudley's, and that's appropriate. He'll have some of his closest friends from Lexington there, and I told Tony Lacey at Four Star, raise one for me as well.
I appreciate it, Sid. I knew that you would have had a long association, and this time of year when there's something, there's a passing like that, sometimes it kind of slips through the cracks.
But yeah, no, and I appreciate you bringing it up too.
Well, we'll talk more certainly as the year unfolds. We've got some house cleaning to do, things like the sire lists, and we'll see who exceeded expectation and who may have been a little disappointing, still waiting for their progeny to blossom. But Sid, as always, fun, spirited discussion, and we will say thank you to Sire Watch Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hill and Dale. And actually, I owe everybody a John Secura visit too. We got to get John in here to beginning of the year. So, Sid, thanks so much.
Well, thank you, Steve. I'll talk to you next week.
You bet. Sid Fernando, everybody, follow Sid, and you can work with Sid. Work Thoroughbred Consultants, WERK, 510-490-1111. And, you know, one more reminder, when it comes to your Enix package and if you're stallion, yeah, the decisions are, the foals are dropping. So decisions are being made. If you have not enrolled your stallion, call the number. Call work. 510-490-1111. Make sure your stallion, regional or otherwise, is in the Enix program, so that when people do mare matches, your stallion is represented. Take a break. Come back and visit with Brian Corner. And yes, he won the La Brea Spiced Perfection, the Smiling Tiger, and the first grade one winner for Smiling Tiger. But the biggest wins came for, let's be honest, the big wins came for Samantha Siegel. I saw a bunch of, Samantha had, seemed like she won a bunch of races over the last 2 weeks. I got to look it up. Back after this, Brian Corner joins us, Bob Baffert later, and Tom Proctor. Proctor kicked off his year the right way. Caribou Club. We'll talk to Brian, though, after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Enjoy Daily Racing Form's best value with a multi-track PP pack. Get 5 full-card PPs featuring the day's best racing for only $6. Each DRF multi-track PP pack features full-card DRF pass performances for the top tracks you want to play. Handicapping articles and analysis, closer looks for key tracks, and selections by DRF handicappers. Daily packs and longer plans for all budgets are available. Download full-card PPs for 5 of today's top tracks. Visit drf.com/multi-track today.
Pennsylvania's breeding program is truly the most lucrative in North America. Now, we'll pay a 50% breeder award for PA-sired, PA-bred maidens who run first, second, or third, with 25% for non-PA-sired, PA-breds. Last year, the number of mares bred rose by 15% in Pennsylvania. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at PABred.com.
Your barn is successful. Your program is tried and true. However, there are a few horses that aren't responding in the way you'd like. Does this sound familiar? Well, let Biomedical Research Labs help change that. Our clinically proven products will help your equine athletes become their very best. I guarantee it. This is Joseph Vellante. To learn more, contact me at 215-501-6880 and visit brlscience.com.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-9
with
35 years at the forefront of sports technology, Stats provides next-generation sports content for basketball, baseball, football, soccer. And now, Stats is turning its sights to horse racing. Racelens is the most in-depth product on the market. With innovative analytics powered by data from Equibase, it will change the way you follow horse racing. Stats Racelens, bringing clarity to handicapping. Learn more at stats.com/racelens.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing, this is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
I fell in love with your body and soul. My hands feel sticky and my head's eyes cold. My sugar tastes sour, my soul tastes sweet. I want to lay down, but I just can't sleep. It's your voodoo. It's your voodoo.
We're back at the races. About 15 to the top of the hour. Tom Proctor in a little bit. And right now, happy to get Brian Corner on to start the year. And we always get a chance to look back at opening day at Santa Anita and Spiced Perfection's win in the La Brea. Just a terrific performance. Calbred stood out. And she, if you were handicapping the race, you had to say to yourself, if it's not, you know, if it's not going to be Dream Tree, Spiced Perfection looked like the, you know, the right other horse. And then she went out and did it. Brian, congratulations.
Hey, thank you. Thanks for having me on.
Not at all. You know, it's one of the great days in racing, and you know, there's the build up, and everybody looks forward to, and it doesn't disappoint. You came into this, I think, you know, as I just mentioned, it was obviously Dream Tree to beat, but your filly really has gotten good, and perfect timing to end the year.
Yeah, you know, I don't show a lot of emotion when I win, but you're here talking about it right now, and I'm getting goosebumps. So, yeah, it's pretty special, and it's nice to know you have a filly like that in the barn and have to make those decisions of where you're going to go next. And she's been such an easy filly to train. I mean, if there's anything to go wrong with her, it'd just be a big shock. So it feels like we got a lot to look forward to.
And she, when you look at the campaign that you had with her, that was her eighth start of the year. She made six starts as a two-year-old. She really has only had, you know, a couple of 30, 45-day little, you know, in-season freshenings. I mean, it feels like she's a horse that's thriving with racing.
Yeah, I think that with a lot of horses, I mean, some of the best horses that ever were to run, we probably never saw them get to their best because of injuries, you know, or never even made it to the races. But it's just funny that you say how her campaign was no start. I'm just thinking back when she ran her first start and got beat, the Dare to Dream Stables was very nervous that, you know, the start really early in the year and there was no competition. We needed to run her back in 10 days because she might not ever break her maiden if we don't get this now, the Calbred bonus. And I look back, that's just a funny thing.
That was in the summer of 17, and she actually faltered as a first time starter. She went off favored and got beat by Empress of Love.
She didn't break real sharp, and you know, a lot of my horses, I don't push on them real hard early into the first one, and always think, you know, run them into shape a little more. So it really didn't disappoint me, but they got real nervous and said, "We need to run right back." So we did, and you know, everything worked out from there.
Well, and you know, you've done some fun things with her. You've run her down the hill. You've run her a little long, a little short, and it feels like you know, you started to focus coming out of the Unzip Me down the hill, where she was a good third. I mean, she ran well there, but you know, then the opportunity at Del Mar to go 7/8, what a perfect setup for the La Brea.
Yeah, it did. We even optioned to go to Golden Gate and run a little Calbred bait race the 1st of December. And I just said to the guys, you know, if we're going to think about the La Brea, now's the time because she's really sharp. It's time just to focus on that and forget the Calbred scene for a minute. It worked out like, you know, no better than it could have.
You've obviously tinkered with her too, Brian. And you know, it And I want you to explain to people, because there's so many handicappers when we look at the PPs and we see the fronts, we see the bandages go on. And she started with bandages. Is it a rundown issue? You know, talk about your use.
Yeah, it is. It's a hitting thing, you know, and we've had different chewers look at her or whatever, and she's all balanced, but she has a tendency to want to hit herself pretty good once in a while, so... You know, she runs good with them on. I know a lot of people don't like four bandages, thinking there's really a problem underneath there, but it's nothing like that at all. It's just a protector, and, you know, doesn't look the greatest, but it works.
And for those, you know, for those that, you know, that heard the term and might not be familiar, it's basically when, you know, the horse's rear hooves catch the front in the, you know, in the process of running, and so you're basically protecting the horse from, you know, from basically denting themselves up.
Yep.
You also put on blinkers, and what's your policy and you know, because you waited a long time, and it wasn't as if she hadn't had some performances that, you know, like the Evening Jewel win. What went into the blinkers decision?
I'm not looking at the form. I think it was the race after Joe Talamo rode her in the summer at Del Mar when we kind of buried her down on the fence a little bit and thought she could run from further off the pace, and she didn't fire at all that day, and it was a stunner. I mean, she's never done that. And I just figured from that day forward, you know, hopefully put blinkers on her, keep her little forwardly placed and doing it her own way, you know, kind of running off at the rider a little bit and him having to ask her. And that day it looked like she was looking around at, you know, everything around her and never even got engaged. So I think that's from that day forward we've had them on, and it's really, really helped.
Absolutely. And, it coordinated it with, you know, with a jump in her figures, you know, up into the mid-80s, and then her first 90 buyer came in the Betty Grable, and then here in the win in the La Brea, you know, she paired up the 91. What's your talk about? I haven't had this conversation with trainers in recent memory. What is your policy with blinkers, and how much of a cup do you put on? Do you drill the little hole so that they can see motion? How do you play with the blinkers?
I don't know. I've never been a hole guy in the blinkers. I came through the quarter horse scene, and most of those horses all run with blinkers. And I think most of them just run scared when they can't see anything behind them. So when they hear noise of the rider, they really run from them. I think it makes them real aggressive to any noise behind them because they're taking that cue to go forward, you know. And, I mean, sometimes if you put Baffert uses the little teeny cup a lot.
Right.
And that's just to cover up the rider where they can't see what he's doing up there and, you know, kind of pay more attention to what's going on in front of him. And it's just to what degree you think your horse needs to focus is what I think.
Well, and of course, this is instructive to owners by when you're making orders from your tack guy, from your silk maker, get several sets of blinkers so that Brian can, you know, can trim the blinker accordingly.
Exactly.
Otherwise,
on certain horses, I think holes really do work. I mean, I do worry sometimes that if I put too big of a cup on a horse, he's not going to see a horse come up alongside of him. But I don't know if a hole really, you know, I mean, I guess takes care of that problem, but I guess it does.
Well, and you know, for those that are sensitive to this kind of thing, if you don't get several sets of blinkers, don't get angry when they have to put somebody else's blinker on your horse.
When you see yours chopped up and you wonder what happened after you got a beautiful new set,
right? That's the best, and then they disappear. It's like you get that call. Could you order some more blinkers?
Yeah, that does happen.
The Dare to Dream people. I mean, this was a $50,000 Barrett's purchase, and as a 2-year-old, and for a Smiling Tiger, this is, you know, this obviously was a horse that, you know, that had something going for her, you know, right from the get-go.
Well, she had a very good preview. I think she worked 10 flat, and I was there a couple days early to watch the previews, and really she was a buyback. And, I mean, the story is I was on my way to the car, to drive home from Del Mar, and they called me and saw the results and saw she was bought back and asked me about her. And I go, well, I have her good on my list for her work, but I know she's small. And that's how we bought her. We went back and negotiated and got her bought as I was leaving after the sale. Nobody wanted her.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. And so I won't, and we won't, unless you want to reveal did you get under the number or right after?
No, I think they published the real number of what we negotiated. We paid through the office.
Very
good. It wasn't a private deal. We did it through the office of Barrett, so that's what we did pay for.
Well, and you know, you mentioned that she's on the smaller side. She was the second foal out of Perfect Feet, the Pleasantly Perfect runner, and you know, now with that win, it's funny because that Cruel Intention, the full,
right.
You know, the full
Baffer.
Brother, Baffer. Yeah, it's unbelievable. They both, they both become, black type horses, and it's really the breeder. We're going to find out a little bit about Premier Thoroughbreds as well. It's a great success for them.
Yeah, that's really exciting.
Going forward, you got the whole Santa Anita season to play with. What do you think?
I don't know. I looked ahead, and if we want to stay open company, you know, and try. I mean, we have to go from 3-year-old fillies to older mares, and you know, Baffert has Marley Freedom out here wandering around, and nobody really wants to just have to hook into her. But I mean, to get graded stakes helps this mare's value so much. I mean, the Santa Monica is a shot, you know, against olders. It's in mid-February, and then there's a cowbred race going 3/4 a couple of days later for 100. So, got to figure out what we want to chase.
Well, and you mentioned the open company versus the cowbred, and the cowbred stake program, absolutely attractive. And one thing about her is she's run well on all three California surfaces. It doesn't matter if she's at Santa Anita, Del Mar, or Los Al.
Yeah, I don't. I was wondering here, had something going on. What'd you say about that question?
Yeah, I mentioned that you don't have to worry no matter what you're going to do with her. She's run well at all three dirt surface tracks in California. I mean, she's been good at Del Mar, Los Al, and hometown.
Right. Yeah, it doesn't really matter. We're still up in the air a little bit on the turf, you know, because a lot of the cowbred older mare races this year are on the grass. And going long, I am down the hill, so we'll just have to see what, you know, if she can step up and be just as good on the grass or not.
Well, she certainly has distinguished herself. This is a really great way to start, technically to start the season. And meanwhile, in addition to Spice Perfection, I was kidding before you came on the air, that we have to talk as much about Samantha as possible, because she certainly it seems like she won. And between you and Paul McGee, it feels like JMS won a bunch of races here in December.
We won a few. I don't know if it's two or three, but I mean, yeah, we're doing really well as a team. I mean, it's such a pleasure to train and have an opportunity to buy horses in this position. I mean, that's what people dream of. And, I mean, just looking forward to what we have, like 2-year-olds that really didn't make it, turning 3, and horses we have turned out, and the new 2-year-olds coming in, you know, this next year, mid-season, should just be really strong.
A couple of the recent winners going back to the end of Del Mar, spend, and then she faced Allowance Foes the other day. Didn't run badly.
No, she didn't. I mean, she didn't break. She really broke very awkward, and the instructions were to, you know, kind of go to the front. Thought that was the tactic, but when you break that bad, it was really a good day just to sit on her and teach her something. And I think that race is under the throwout race, even though it's going to help her in the end. You know, it's just education. She needs to run more.
Now, you also finished the year on New Year's Eve, Route 6-6. What do you think? It took a few starts for for Route 66.
Well, he gave him time off. He had a little problem in a hind leg, back ankle, and he was probably running with it a couple starts, and we knew something wasn't quite right, and we couldn't pinpoint it. And Nuke scanned him and found a little crack in a back ankle, which wasn't in a spot where it was ever any, you know, danger to him. But he's come back, and he's just trained like a beast, and, you know, we were looking for big things out of him. You know, and I got a Baltus really liked his horse in there that day, and asked me, you know, well, how's your horse? You know, I said, ah, he'll probably take, he might need a race, you know, going a mile first time, because we were going to start him at Los Alamitos a couple weeks earlier, going 6.5, and the race never went. So we were just kind of on pause mode of what we were going to do. And after the race, Baltus was screaming at me, ah, you know, who do you think I am? You know, you're pulling the wool over my eyes. I'm stupid. I said, well, yeah, we did need a race. If we were really ready, we would have beat you four. So, yeah, we did need a race. We only beat you nose. So he didn't like that that much, but that's the way I felt about it.
I love it. I love it. Well, I'm sure there's a couple of now three-year-olds that have been a little bit delayed getting to the races. Who's hiding down the shed row that we haven't seen yet?
We got quite a few. I mean, we got a few cowbreds and some open horses. Nothing real close. They're getting there, you know. So, I mean, we have a full half-sister to take the 101 by Bodie Meister that we were real high on last year. She's over at Los Alamitos getting ready. And there's a few of them. There's a Captain Scotty ran yesterday. We have a full sister to him. Peter Miller has him. He's a quality road. And there's a few. You know, I never get real optimistic because you never know what's going to happen. So I just try to watch them come along and let them pump me up as they go.
Well, there was one I thought that had a little bit of a look at a price on opening day, and that was in the Nightcap. I mean, certainly, it certainly felt like the winner, that Acker, who had already cleared the condition in a previous race. But I thought Cupid's Claws had a bit of a look and feels like a horse that might be harboring some talent.
I think so. I think you're right on that. You know, Joe kind of had a rough trip down on the fence, you know, down the backside. He was looking behind him and didn't know if he could get out. Then when he did, they were still kind of nowhere to go. And it was kind of a buried race. You know, he never really hit him or did anything down the lane. Cause, you know, even the way he ran and he ran on, he still ran into the wall of horses at the wire. So, yeah, he's come along pretty good. And, you know, it's just one of those things you got to figure out kind of how far he really wants to run. Does he want to run a mile a quarter or does he want to, you know, have a little punch and run a mile? But he looks like he'll run one speed and go quite a ways.
Yeah, I used him and Acker to close out the multi-race sequences, and the inside trip was, you know, definitely figured in. So I would suggest people put this Kitten's Joy on their watch list. Broke his maiden in the previous start and looks to have some talent. Boy, you better make room in the winner's circle when he wins. Hey, there's like 37 owners.
Yeah, Blinkers on. They have quite a few people. You know, they do a good job. And, yeah, there's a lot of people that show up that you've never even seen before when they start winning the special.
He's a gelding, and he's actually out of an affirmed mare, which is kind of cool, too. Yeah. Well, Brian, you win races like the La Brea. You go home, you know, all the anticipation of, you know, of the start of the meet, and it's just an idyllic way to, you know, spend Christmas and New Year's, and I'm sure everybody in the barn still smiling and dare to dream, and just congratulations. A terrific start, and looking forward to getting out there in March, and looking forward to her four-year-old campaign.
Yeah, well, I appreciate it. Yeah, it's really exciting stuff.
Brian Coroner, and whether it's for Samantha Siegel or Blinkers On or Dare to Dream, Brian really with your second best year, by the way. I don't know if you looked at the tally, but second best year of your career.
Well, that's good to know because there was a big lull in the middle.
Well, listen, that's what it's a game of ups and downs, right?
It sure is. They say that all the time.
Well, certainly, certainly an up year for the Bryant Coroner Barn, and there's good things ahead in 2019. Brian, we'll talk soon.
All right, thank you.
Not at all. Brian Coroner, everybody, and Spice Perfection, Cowbread. In fact, you had it. There was a Cowbread. You had the Cowbread Exacta, right? The Cruel Jack Philly, that hot autumn. I think was a Cowbread. Yeah, she was a Cowbread too. So Cowbread Exacta in the grade one. La Brea, Baffert's other runner, emboldened, ended up third in there. Happy Like a Fool, who, you know, took, I guess it's reputation, right? I didn't understand the money she was taking personally. I mean, she was okay in there, but, she ended up fourth. Ron Paolucci sent Heaven Has My Nikki out. She got the last sizable check, finishing fifth. Kelly Schumer, who is relocated from Brad Cox, made her second start for Peter Miller. She just kind of ran around there. She really never offered. Maybe she needs a little more acclimation. And of course, the big question, the big disappointment was Dreamtree's effort. She never looked comfortable. It never looked at any point like she was going to do anything in there. And then she started to back out of it before the turn. You could just see that Drayden Van Dyke had kind of an empty vessel. We'll see what Baffert's thoughts were coming out of there with her and regrouping with Dreamtree. Let's take a break here. A little past the top of the hour. Day one. I almost said Monday, but it's Wednesday. But the start of the new year. Tom Proctor. We had to wait a long time last year before we got Proctor on to celebrate. Don't have to wait long this year after Caribou Club's win yesterday in the Joe Hernandez. Proctor next. Little Baffert later. Stay with us.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Enjoy Daily Racing Form's best value with a multi-track PP pack. Get five full-card PPs featuring the day's best racing for only $6. Each DRF multi-track PP pack features full-card DRF pass performances for the top tracks you want to play. Handicapping articles and analysis, closer looks for key tracks, and selections by DRF handicappers. Daily packs and longer plans for all budgets are available. Download full-card PPs for five of today's top tracks. Visit drf.com/multi-track today.
Pennsylvania's breeding program is truly the most lucrative in North America. Now, we'll pay a 50% breeder award for PA-sired, PA-bred maidens who run first, second, or third, with 25% for non-PA-sired, PA-breds. Last year, the number of mares bred rose by 15% in Pennsylvania. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at PABred.com.
Your barn is successful. Your program is tried and true. However, there are a few horses that aren't responding in the way you'd like. Does this sound familiar? Well, let Biomedical Research Labs help change that. Our clinically proven products will help your equine athletes become their very best. I guarantee it. This is Joseph Vellante. To learn more, contact me at 215-501-6880 and visit brlscience.com.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-9 938-4643.
With 35 years at the forefront of sports technology, Stats provides next-generation sports content for basketball, baseball, football, soccer. And now, Stats is turning its sights to horse racing. RaceLens is the most in-depth product on the market. With innovative analytics powered by data from Equibase, it will change the way you follow horse racing. Stats RaceLens, bringing clarity to handicapping. Learn more at stats.com/racelens.